you, brothers. We thank God for our men's chorus, their music ministry to us. I want to read from the Gospel of Luke, chapter 9, verse 37 through verse 43a, the first half of the 43rd verse, New International Version. And the text says, "The next day, when they came down from the mountain, a large crowd met him. A man in the crowd called out, 'Teacher, I beg you to look at my son, for he is my only child.' A spirit seizes him, and he suddenly screams. It throws him into convulsions so that he foams at the mouth. It scarcely ever leaves him and is destroying him. I begged your disciples to drive it out, but they could not. 'You unbelieving and perverse generation,' Jesus replied, 'how long shall I stay with you and put up with you? Bring your son here.' Even while the boy was coming, the demon threw him to the ground in a convulsion. But Jesus rebuked the impure spirit, healed the boy, and gave him back to his father. And they were all amazed at the greatness of God." The word of the Lord. While I have breath to pray. My title comes from, thank you, ushers, one of the old, we called them metered hymns. And all of them, all hymns have a meter. That I used to hear in church when I was growing up in Chicago. Folk would sing this phrase, "Oh, let my heart no more despair while I have breath to pray." You've heard me share that before. And the theology of the verse is, if I'm alive, then I can pray. If I can pray, God can respond. And if God can respond, I don't have to be in despair. Oh, let my heart no more despair while I have breath to pray. There's still hope. There's still time. There's still something that can be done about the situation. In other words, never give up hope. Sometimes you have no other choice. Sometimes giving up hope is not an option. And that is the case with the father in the text I read. Let me give you the backstory. Jesus takes Peter, James, and John up onto a mountain. And while they are on the mountain, Jesus is transfigured. His countenance changes. His face glows with the radiant glory of God. It's a life-changing experience for the three disciples. You remember one of them says, "It's good for us to be here. Let's build three tabernacles." That's how excited they get. That's what they're doing on the mountain. In the meantime, the other nine disciples are left behind. They are on the ground with a huge crowd awaiting Jesus' return. As the disciples wait, they are approached by a man seeking help for his son. The disciples try to help the man. They try to cure his son, but they are unsuccessful. That's the sort of the backstory. The father doesn't get the help he needs, but he doesn't leave. He could take his son home. He could give up hope. He could say to himself, if his disciples can't help me, then this whole movement with Jesus isn't worth my time and attention. He could leave, but he doesn't. Sometimes you have no other choice. The Father embodies the theology in those words, "Oh, let my heart no more despair while I have breath to pray." Let's look at the text more closely. One thing you notice that comes through very powerfully is this Father's despair. Because the text says, a man in the crowd called out, "Teacher, I beg you to look at my son, for he is my only child. A spirit seizes him, and he suddenly screams. It throws him into convulsions so that he foams at the mouth. It scarcely ever leaves him and is destroying him." This son is suffering from convulsions. He's foaming at the mouth. It could be epilepsy. It could be a demonic spirit. According to the Father, when the spirit seizes him, the son screams out in agony. This father is in despair. He is worried. This is his only child. It's a desperate situation. The father has no doubt heard about the ministry of Jesus. Perhaps he's heard about his healings and miracles. The father is desperate, and he's concerned about the welfare of his son. He shows up seeking help for a desperate situation. Have any of you ever been around someone experiencing a seizure? It's a rough thing to observe. And then you feel so helpless. You try to contain the person. You try to help them. You don't want them to hit their head on something. You don't want them to hurt themselves. You don't want them to bite on the tongue. You know, you do all kinds of stuff. You feel helpless. It's a desperate, it's a frightening thing to experience and to handle. And for this father, it was difficult. When your child is sick or disturbed, you can experience a lot of stress and grief. You can become engulfed with despair and a sense of hopelessness. And when you don't understand the nature of the malady, and when you don't have a remedy for the malady, things can weigh heavily upon your spirit. Many parents are in despair about their children, and the father in our text is in despair. You see his agony. You see his despair. A couple of years ago, I went to a restaurant a couple of blocks from the church to eat lunch by myself, and sat there prepared to have lunch. Another couple comes in, an older couple. They look to be in their 70s, 75-ish. They came in with a younger man who seemed to be about 30. And I assumed that they were a family. These were the parents and a son. They sat down at a table near me. And all of a sudden, the son sort of yells out. And it wasn't like he was yelling words. It was like he was barking out sounds, you know, like Tourette's or something. You know, he just yelled out. And I was like, "Whoa, what's going on?" And then the parents tried to calm him down. And then he just kept on yelling. And then waiter comes to the table. He gets a little agitated. The waiter brings water and straws, and the mother gets ready to drink from the glass, and he sort of knocks it out of her hand and spills all over, and then he's yelling, and the father's trying to calm him, and the mother's trying to calm him. I assume that these are the parents because of the way they were trying to attend to this young man. And he's yelling out. I'm a little annoyed. I said to myself, you know, if he's having troubles, it became obvious that he had some kind of disability, mental disability, or physical. If he's got that, why come to a restaurant? But as I looked at the parents, and they had gray hair, wrinkles in their skin, they looked frustrated, they looked exasperated, that annoyance shifted from annoyance to empathy. And my heart went out to them. I said, here they are at this stage in life. having to deal with a child with these kinds of issues, how difficult must it be for these parents? They have to perhaps be in despair and agony or frustrated. When you got that kind of situation and you should be retired, enjoying your life, and you're still parenting, you're still doing all the things that you need to do, it's a difficult thing. It's a difficult thing. I put myself in their shoes and my heart went out to them. They were parents dealing with a rough situation. Perhaps they came to the restaurant to have a different venue for him, some sense of normalcy for him, some sense of normalcy for themselves, or perhaps to give him a chance to experience something different. They were parents, like this father in the text, dealing with a difficult situation, parents in despair. The text not only shows this despair, what the father is going through having to deal with his son, but it also shows a father waiting with hope. Because the text says, the next day when Jesus came down from the mountain, a large crowd met him. A man in the crowd, the father, cried out, "Teacher, I beg you to look at my son, for he is my only child." A spirit seizes him, and he suddenly screams. It throws him into convulsions so that he foams at the mouth. "I begged your disciples to drive it out, but they could not." I like this. Jesus and the three disciples spend the whole day and night on the mountain, at least one night, according to Luke. By the time they come down, the father has already interacted with the other nine disciples. They have already tried to help the man's son. He does not leave. The father stands there with the crowd and waits for Jesus' return. He doesn't get angry and go back home. He waits on Jesus. He doesn't know how long Jesus will be on the mountain, but he stays there until Jesus returns. Sometimes you have no other option. If you want help, sometimes you gotta wait in line. The other striking thing about it is the son is sort of a silent victim. He never speaks in the story. He cannot help himself. He depends upon his father's intercession. If the father doesn't wait, the son misses out. If the father gives up hope, the son misses out. The father waits in hope because he is concerned about his son. The outcome for the son rests upon the decisions of the father. Isn't that something? The outcome. So we see a father waiting in hope. That's important. Bible says, "Weeping may endure for a night, but joy cometh in the morning." But we don't always know how long the night will be. But if we want the morning joy, we have to wait until the morning comes. Come on, somebody. Not necessarily a 24-hour situation or 24-hour span. Your night might last for months. It might be protracted, and you still have to wait until the morning comes. We see a father waiting in hope. He stands at that mountain with that crowd waiting. He demonstrates faith. He demonstrates trust in God. He trusts Jesus for an outcome, even though the disciples aren't helpful. I remember sitting in a waiting room at a hospital, and I was waiting to be checked in. There were others there. There was a couple holding a small child who seemed to be in a lot of pain. There was a man there sitting in a wheelchair with a bandage around his head. There was a woman bent over holding her stomach. We were all there at the same time waiting in the waiting room, seeking help for and solutions for our ailments. We looked different. We had different needs. We came from different places. But at that moment, we were all in the same boat, waiting. And the waiting room became a veritable equalizer. So whether you have insurance or you're on welfare, if you're in the waiting room, you're in the same boat, right? Sometimes life puts us in the waiting room. Sometimes we're waiting for assistance. We're waiting for an answer. We're waiting for a way out. People in Ukraine are waiting for the response of the world community. This is on my paper. It just dropped in my spirit. I said to my wife the other day, it's disturbingly terrifying to me. Be sitting in my own home with nothing going on and watching this unfold on television. You know? And so it made me wonder what people were thinking during World War I and the Korean War and other conflicts across the globe where normal things were happening, where they were and buildings were being destroyed and people were being shot and things were happening. Here we are, normal. And watching this on television, so people are waiting for an answer and waiting for a way out. And sometimes we're waiting for a child to turn his or her life around. We're in the waiting room. And when you're in the waiting room of life, you cannot give up hope. Because Jesus doesn't always let us know when he's coming. But he always shows up. Can't give him a time schedule. When is he coming? We don't know when he's coming. So we have to wait with hope like this father. One more thing. It shows a father's despair. A father waiting with hope. But I like the father's plea. This text says, a man in the crowd called out, "Teacher, I beg you to look at my son, for he is my only child." He calls out from the crowd and gets Jesus' attention. He calls Jesus teacher, a label of respect. And he pleads with Jesus to look at his son. In other words, notice my son. Give him a moment of your time. Why are we saying that to him? While on others thou art calling, do not pass me by. Notice my son. I know that there are others in the crowd who are sick. That's why they're around here. But look at my son. Sometimes, beloved, you've got to reach out for the help you need. You can't afford to be timid about your request. You've got to ask God for what you want and what you need. And I like that the father says, "I beg you." And he also says, "I begged your disciples." He lets Jesus know that he has enough trust to go to the disciples. He has enough trust to go to the people who represent Jesus. Sometimes that's what we encounter. Folks say, "You're clergy." Folks say, "You're a member of a church." Folks say, "You're a Christian. So I'm coming to you." You're the folk who represent Jesus. And when they can't help, when the disciples can't help, he has enough trust to wait and try Jesus. Everybody in the church can't help you. Sometimes you got to get through to Jesus directly. Sometimes you call on the phone and the pastor's number is busy or is unavailable. But you need prayer right then. You can't always get to somebody else. You've got to be able to get through directly. You need to pray your own prayer. You need to pray to God for yourself. The Father begs, which means he pleads with Jesus. It's like saying, "Please help me. Please help my son." When you need help, you can't be too proud to beg. You can't be too high and mighty and highfalutin to pray and call on somebody for assistance. That's why our forebears in the African American community used to sing when they couldn't get the words. When they couldn't form the words, they would sing, "Oh, Lord, have mercy. Lord, have mercy. Have mercy, have mercy on me." It is the Father's plea. I beg you, look at my son that secures help and healing, because the Bible says, Jesus says, bring your son here. And even while the boy was coming, the demon threw him to the ground in a convulsion. But Jesus rebuked the impure spirit, healed the boy, and gave him back to his father. And they were all amazed at the greatness of God. It's the father's plea that gets healing for his son. The disciples should have helped the son. Jesus had given them authority over the demons. He had sent them out with the commission and the command to do work in his name. But it is the plea of this father that draws Jesus into action. Jesus heals the boy. I said earlier, the boy depends upon the father's intercession. It is because of the father's plea that the boy is healed. That is why we cannot give up hope. That is why we have to persist in prayer. We have to intercede for others, because we might be the only hope a person has. Our prayer might be the only prayer a person has. Sometimes we've got to cry out for our loved ones and our family, because they cannot cry out or will not cry out for themselves. Isn't that why we sing that song, Somebody Prayed for Me? Had me on their mind, took the time to pray for me. I'm so glad they prayed. I'm so glad somebody prayed for me. My youngest sister died 21 years ago from multiple sclerosis, leaving a husband and 3 children. And near the end of her life, Kimberly was her name. She was in a nursing home. Her mind was active, but the illness immobilized her. It was like she was trapped in her body. Illness robbed her of her voice and ability to communicate. And Kimberly was not in the position to show up at someone's church and be carried to the altar and prayed over by the saints in the church. She was not in the position to recite her own prayer. She needed others to pray. Disease had robbed her of her ability to make her own plea. So she needed somebody else to make the plea for her. Addiction, mental illness, homelessness, and other maladies block a person's ability to make their own plea. And instead of standing on the sidelines, criticizing and complaining and saying what you will not do or what somebody else ought not do, you ought to stand in the gap and grasp the resources to help those caught in the web of despair. We cannot give up hope because a soul hangs in the balance. I see families in this congregation, families in churches that I've served, dealing with despair, dealing with difficult situations, and I wonder how they get through it. And the thing is, they know that if they don't hold on to hope, there will be no help for their child or for their situation. Thank God for this father's plea. Thank God for a father who cries out and says, look at my son. You might say, what kind of request is that? Look at my son. What can he do by looking? He could have said to Jesus, heal my son. He says, look at my son. Sometimes the very words you get out are the only words you can get out. But it doesn't matter so much what he said. Look at my son. It matters who he asked. When you ask the right person, it makes all the difference in the world. Blind Bartimaeus was sitting on the side of the road, and Jesus came by and he cried out, have mercy upon me. It doesn't matter what he said. It matters who he asked about it. He asked the right person. The sinner, Jesus talked about this man that stood next to the Pharisee. And the Pharisee prayed and talked about how good he was, how he kept the commandments. But the other man would not even look up to heaven. He said, have mercy upon me, a sinner. It wasn't what he said. It was who he was talking to. And when you talk to the right person, something will happen in your life. You can have the most eloquent prayer. You can have the most fervent prayer. You can pray the longest prayer. But if you pray to the wrong person, your eloquence doesn't mean anything. But when you pray to the man named Jesus and pray to the right person, stuff starts to happen. That's why they said, I came to Jesus just as I was weary, worn, and sad. I found in him a resting place. And he has made me glad. I'm through, but my soul is happy. I want you to know today Jesus is on the main line. Call him up and tell him what you want. If you need your body healed, call him up and tell him what you want. Invitation, Christian discipleship is extended. I want you to know, those of you who are present and those of you who are watching, it doesn't matter how big the crowd is, and it doesn't matter how dark the despair. Jesus can hear you in the crowd, and Jesus can speak to your despair. He doesn't promise that everything will always be rosy. He promises to be with us in every situation, to guide us, to walk with us. That is the Christ we offer to you. That is the Christ we extend the invitation to receive him by faith. So that when you're in the waiting room of life, you know that you're not alone. The invitation.
Oh, my brother, we offer Christ to you. Oh, my sister,
he will give you brand new life.
Oh, he will give you brand new life.
Through
life abundantly. Oh,
greeters for being ready. Just from now on, just come on down. If I don't mention it, I'm an old man and I forget things. So just please come down when we extend the invitation. Blessings to you, beloved. Be in prayer for this Youth Week and Youth Sunday. Join us for our Lenten prayer call. Let us prepare for the benediction, and the ushers will help you to exit. Beginning in April, perhaps, we will make some shifts and won't have to exit by rows and won't have to sit in every other pew because we're at a different stage. We're waiting to see how the things happen with South by Southwest. And if there aren't any other surges, if we're still doing better and making progress, we can make adjustments.